דניאל פרק שני. ובשנת שתיים למלכות נבוכדנצר חלם נבוכדנצר חלמות. ותתפעם רוחו ושנתו נהייתה עליו. Now, first of all, it couldn't possibly be in the second year of the Malchut Nebuchadnezzar, because the whole story begins basically after he's already been king for 5 years, at least according to Seder Olam, has come back, and it's really the 11th year of Jehoiakim, in which the first year Nebuchadnezzar was busy, then he came, then he was conquered Paro Necho, the wars in Carchemish, and things like that. This makes no sense at all. Unless, the only one who takes it literally is Reb Sadia Gaon, who says that maybe this went on for a long time. Maybe Nebuchadnezzar had his first dreams very early on until they drove him absolutely crazy. A little difficult to believe. So B'shtach Shtayim Malchuto, most understand that what it means literally is the second year from the time of the Churban HaBayit. Because it was only at that time, and we see this from Achashverosh, Ad chatzi amalchut, v'lo davar chotzeret amalchut, that the presence of the Beit HaMikdash was a horrific threat to any of these malachim. It represented the utter antithesis of every sense that they had of being able to define the world in their image. And so the same thing that people can't stand about the existence of the people of Israel and the state of Israel today. They can just get back to a normal world. And so what it means is, and some suggest that the real power of Nebuchadnezzar only came out after that period in which he was seen as someone that was really chashuv. So the second year would mean in the second year post-Churban, where over there he had gone into the Beit HaMikdash and done all of these horrible things. And that's when he was given to see these dreams which scared the H out of him. And so he had this dream, Chalam Nebuchadnezzar Chalomot, and it wasn't one dream. As we'll see, it was constructed of different parts which required different elements of interpretation. And once again, in a clear-cut resonance with the story of Yosef in Mitzrayim, the same words are used. Paro gets up, vatitpa em rucho. Here it says, vatitpa em rucho. Now, vatitpa em, that's a strange word. First of all, it's reflexive, as opposed to what it's doing to him. It's vatitpa em. He's ringing now. In other words, he, first of all, it may be because he's totally distraught. So it's almost as if he's doing this to himself. He's so upset. He's so angry that he's just grinding away at himself so that he's reflexively shaking throughout, ringing with the concern that he's got over here. There's many pirushim. One, the one that Rashi gives in the story of Yosef when he references Nebuchadnezzar, which again is an indication of how much this rings to us in terms of its association. It just rings that bell, Vatitpaim, that one, which is one of the Pshatim in the Medrash, that by Nebuchadnezzar there was a double ringing because he couldn't remember the dream. He was going crazy. He knows it was the most significant thing he ever saw in his life, and every time he tries to think about it, he can't reconstruct it. So this is much more of a profoundly reflexive kind of thing, that I'm so stupid that I'm being shown things. Not only don't I understand the significance, I can't even remember what they are. It's on the tip of my tongue. And you can never remember it. So that's one possibility. The other possibility has to do with the relationship to the actual story of Yosef to Daniel. Since, says the Medrash, by Daniel we had Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, all of whom who end up becoming important through this dream, as we'll see. So because of that, it says, Vatitpa'im, because now it was for four people, not for two people. So we have to increase the power of the dream. And in the case of Yosef, it was only Yosef who was affected by the results of the dream. Other possibilities are, Vatitpa'im Rucho by Paros, because there was only one dream. Because as Yosef tells him, it's really one dream, just different. It's using different dream images, but it's the same dream. In this case, it wasn't one dream. It's two very different dreams, and they have completely different meanings. So the Vatitpa'im is merames to the other dream that we end up talking about a little bit later. But there are those who hold that all of this was a trick. He pretended not to know the dream. And, of course, the interpreters suspected that he was pretending not to know the dream. Because, I mean, in his own mind, well, once I tell you the dream, you'll come up with some idiotic interpretation. So anybody could do that. How about you tell me what the dream was? Then we'll know whether this is serious. And they realize that it must have been that, which is why they keep trying to maybe move him away from that stand. Okay, there's different as to how profoundly you forgot, but even if he says he forgot it, they knew that the moment that they identified it, he'd know. No, that had nothing. That doesn't ring a bell at all. Vayomer HaMelech, so the king decides that he commands Likrola Chartumim, call all of the magicians and the Ashapim, those are the astrologers, and the Mechashvim, those are the ones that use the, you know, as the Gemara distinguishes between Maaseh Shedim and Maaseh Kishuf, and to the Kastim, no, obviously it doesn't mean to the Kastim as a nation, it means to the famous Chaldean, which is that word, Kaldoi, is the way the Gemara talks about, that's the Misora that they have of their own particular approach to astrology. L'hagid l'amelech halamotav, they should tell the king what he dreamed. Help, I have all the amdulif l'amelech, and they come and they stand in front of the king. Look, I had a dream. I am going nuts. And here he's only talking about one dream, and so it's vatipa'im. Later on, we'll talk about the second one, which maybe he does remember. I need to know that dream. Pa'amon. Va'idabru ha-kastim la-melech aramit. So the kastim, of course, from the same nationhood, a nationality as Nebuchadnezzar himself, they speak to him in the vulgar tongue. Now, at this point, the language in the book switches to Aramaic from this point on. Because Aramaic was the vulgar tongue. Everybody spoke Aramaic.
Vulgar as the
vulgar. Vulgar, yeah, vulgar. I don't mean in the modern sense. The vulgar tongue in the sense of the Italian as opposed to the Latin. So the book switches at this point to Aramaic, which is very strange. And it goes back to Lashon HaKodesh when it's talking about Daniel's own inner thoughts. They're in Lashon HaKodesh. But the interaction, when he's talking to the king or he's saying something external, it's still in Aramaic. But there's got to be a reason for this. And, I mean, clearly there's many, many issues that involve us in Aramaic. First of all, the fact that it takes us all the way back to the time of Bavel, Shinar, Aram, and their relationship to that movement of the original Migdal Bavel, the mixing up of languages, the fact that the Aramit is particularly a bastardized version of Lashon HaKodesh, which is why the Malachi Asharis refused to speak in Aramaic, and therefore we're careful to say things that are on a darga that we don't want the Malachi Asharis to be involved in. We say it in Aramaic particularly. So that there's very much a sense here of the Golos. Notice this is the complete transfer of our mindset into another language. We're now in Bavel, which is a powerful, very powerful literary device in which you suddenly change the actual language that you're perceiving the events. But there's something else that I don't know how many people recognize. I never saw anybody mention it. And that is that things that you say in Aramaic are not possible to say in Hebrew. In the same way that if you watch Palestinian TV, you burst out laughing because it's like, so they can't be serious. Everything is absurdly exaggerated and the tones are like...
Stylized.
I don't know, but it's stylized to the point of utter caricature in which you're thinking, well, what is this supposed to be? So that, you know, in a third grade play, kids would speak that way, overstating everything and so on. Aramaic is that way. Everything comes across as being out of some kind of insane interaction that's literally one flew over the cuckoo nest. And in order to capture the way in which Nebuchadnezzar, he couldn't act the way he acted in a normal language. He could only act as a complete madman in Aramaic. And you'll see yourself the tonalities, the exaggerations, and the weird things that are going on. There's something of the surreal in anything that's written in Aramaic. And it's interesting that what is remarkable is that researchers of languages I've seen about the poetry of the Nebuchadnezzar, which takes place in Aramaic, is that they point out that no one would have thought you could even write poetry in Arabic. So that it's amazing that he was actually able to write good poetry in Aramaic, as he does later on. And so I think that there's a combination of issues here, but it's definitely meant for us to enter into the mindset of these people and to see everything from a totally different point of view. And it's one of the things that makes the whole story of Daniel so much more palatable, because when you talk about it in English and dreams about monsters and this horror and that horror, they're like, come off it, man. But if it's in Aramaic, well, what do you expect? So, now there are those Rishonim who also learn that they're not mechalek between Lashon Kasdit and Lashon Aramit at all. So there seems to be some either machloket or some confusion about that issue, whether there's the Aramit which is spoken in the street and the Kasdit which is spoken in the palace. We'll see more about this in Esther when the Gemara over there introduces the whole idea with the loss of the Lashon of Bavel, which certainly does not mean Aramit, but we'll discuss it there. In any event, they begin to speak in Aramit. Now, the reason that they speak in Aramit could very well be because they want to make this something that's public and that's the public is sensitive to, and they recognize that they're about to be put into a pretty tough kind of position, and therefore the manipulation of public opinion about how well they're doing is very important to them. And being as they are Kasdim, and the Melech himself also is a Kasdi, so they believe that they have now the edge. And in speaking his tongue from his youth, they can probably get further with the very unreasonable Melech, as we'll see, that is putting them now to the test. Because they caught those words, Vatipaim Ruchi Ladat et Achalom, and they did not like what they heard. So they said to the king, Ve'edabru HaKastin LaMelech Aramit, Malka La'almin Chayi, the Melech should live forever. All you need to do is Amar Chalma Lav Dach Ufish Ranechave. You just tell us the dream, we'll be happy to provide the interpretations. Anam Malka V'Amar LaKazdayan. And so the king answered, this was very sort of formal. V'Anita V'Amarta. And so the king did proclaim. It already has that Arabic TV sense about it, as you could see. So the king now responds and says to the Kasdi, let's get this straight, boys. Milta Mini Azda. Azda is a sense of power. I am proclaiming this one time and very clearly, and we're not going to talk about this anymore. Hein lo tahadu unani chelma ufishrei. If you're not going to tell me the dreams and the interpretations, guess what? Hadamin tit abdun. Now that word, of course, we find the word in Shmuel, where Shmuel goes over and he cuts Agag into bits. And that's the translation of that word over there, Vayishaseyu Vahadame. So the word, therefore, Hadamim tit abdun means, I'm going to chop you up. Somewhat exaggerated. He's killing the Kasdim.
No, I know, but it says Abdun. Oh, like Avad.
You shall be made into. Right. You shall be made. No, it means to made, not Avad. That's with an olive. It means you shall be made into little bits of flesh. And besides that, Uvatechem Nevali Ishtamun. Your homes will all be turned into garbage dumps. I don't think anything will remain behind. After all, for people who lose their lives in this disgusting way, it's only right that everything about them should be wiped off the face of the earth. When he noticed that they were getting a little bit nervous, he was afraid that maybe he was going to shut them up. This was a little bit of overkill. And so he immediately goes to the other side. Vein chelmo fishrei tehachavon. However, if you tell me the dream, and you tell me the response, the interpretation, then you see, matnan v'yekar sagit kablun min kodomai. You are going to get gifts, and you're going to get provisions, and tremendous honor. That's what you're going to get from me. So I would suggest, lehen chelmo fishrei hachavoni. Why don't you just get to work? Tell me the dream and the interpretation. Anut in Yanut v'yamarin. And so they answered once again, and they said, now this time, they don't speak in second person. They're a little bit too nervous to speak about. As they said before, why don't you just tell us to us, your servants, your buddies, we have the not if he's about to cut you into bits. So now all of a sudden everything is in third person. So they say, Malka Chelma Yaymar Le'avdoi, all the king has to do is tell us personally. I mean, we understand you don't want to expose it here in public, but just tell us, because you can trust us. I mean, generally speaking, we understand the real reason you don't want to tell us the dream is you don't want to be maybe poteach pele satan. There's an Indian not to say over a dream that seems evidently horrible. And indeed, that's what we do. We do the incantation, chama tava chazita, chama tava. We go through the whole thing in Aramaic. You saw a good dream, it was a good dream, but tava lahavi, it should be a good dream. So they expected that, you know, if we sort of tell them that we're on your side, don't worry, you can tell we're immediately going to make it into a good dream, and we'll do a good job. You can tell it to us. Ane malka v'yamar, so the king said, okay, that does it. Min yatziv, this is like emet v'yatziv. Now there's no doubt in my mind. Yadana, do you think I don't understand the idana anton zavnin? You're trying to buy time, aren't you? I mean, you know that we're ready to chop off your head, so you're talking. You're talking an awful lot. Me thinketh you talk it too much. Actually, kol kabel, this word kol kabel is another one of these strange Aramaic. It just means because, but it's very, very formal. Kol kabel de, in light of the fact that, instead of just saying because, it's like Pentagonese. So in light of the fact, dichezetun, as the minei milta, because you saw very clearly that you're lost and that I'm absolutely committed to this. You know perfectly well that there's no way out. And so, din chelmalot adunani, if you don't intend to tell me the dream, chavehidatchon, that's a chadato lamut. You have one and only one possible end. You're dead. Umila chidvau shechita is mintun. I know what you're doing. You are now is the mintun. You are preparing all types of typical soothsayer lies. That's all. That they should soothe me while the time passes. Ad idana yishtane. Now this is one way of understanding the pasuk. That initially when he says the idana anton zavnin, you're trying to buy time. That many of the mafarshim explain it that way. Rashi understands it that you understand that the idana yantin means that the time, not that you're trying to buy time, but that you recognize you're trying to not just put off the dream, but that you're hoping that the times will pass. And that things will change. In other words, at one point or another, I'm going to forget this, or I'm going to get involved in something else. And you're hoping that idana yishtane, the times will change. And you know, there's always other business, and maybe I'll get out of this obsession. That's what you're thinking. That's one way of doing it. The other way of understanding it is, you think you're buying time, so why don't we just make this very clear. Adi idana yishtane, at the time that the clock changes. That is when we go from, let's say, morning till afternoon, that's as much time as you get. In other words, that's when you're going to be killed. So we're getting the executioner ready. So, again, lahin chelma amorali, why don't you just tell me the dream, and then I can start believing the inda, the fishrei tahachavununi. Then I'll pay some attention to the interpretation. But if you can't tell me the dream, I'm not even going to listen to the interpretation. Ano kazdaya kadam malkaz v'kazdais answered out the claims in front of the king, the Amarin, and they said, lo itay enash alya beshta demilat malka yecholah chavaya. There's not a man living on this planet that could possibly do what it is that the king is asking you to explain these things. Kol kabel dikon melech rav v'shalit milach hidna lo she'el. And in light of the fact that no king in all of history, no matter how great he was, ever asked such a thing, l'chol chartom v'ashaf v'chazdoi, from any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. Milta dimalka she'el, yakira, what the king is asking is just heavy, baby, really heavy. And the Achoran lo itai di Yechivana konamalta. There is, there's a beautiful remez in that the Medrash reads this. Acharan is a remez to Aharon. Because the chet and the hay interchange. So what you're asking is basically not for humans, it's for supernatural kind of. Maybe there's malachim. I mean, not the kind of malachim. Lahina lahinde medraoni bisraloitoi. It's certainly not with the gods that make their business with people. And this is a term from malachim, called Elohim. And again, as the Rambam himself explains, there are indeed different levels of malachim. So the lowest level of malachim is Yishim. What they were saying is that if you yourself do not have any, honestly don't have any sense of that dream, and you can't bring it out into the world, there's no place for even a malach to get it, at least not the kind that we talk to. Now, I mean, that's not to say that there aren't gods up there on different level, but certainly, I mean, we don't get that kind of thing. Maybe Aaron HaKohen used to have the Urim V'Tumim, but we don't deal with that kind of stuff, at which point, says the Medrash, and you idiots told me to destroy that Beit HaMikdash, now for sure you're dead. Well, that was the only source of real information around here. Kol kabel dana, and in light of all of the above, malka binasuk tzav sagi, the king in an absolute fury and extreme anger, and he gave the command to execute all of the wise men of Bavel. Up you go! The datan efkat, and there comes now, the rule is coming out and it's been stamped. V'chakimayam itkatlin, and they're getting ready now to execute all of the chachamim. And then, uva'o Daniel v'chavroi litkatala. They start searching for Daniel and his friends to kill them too. Now, apparently Daniel and his friends weren't there. He only invited, doesn't say he invited Daniel and his friends. Even though we were told originally that Daniel was actually given this special insight to know the meanings of Chesyonot and so on. Maybe this hadn't come out yet. Maybe this was all to be kept within the confines of the ones that were Osek in magic, which of course Daniel and his other friends had not yet, well, would never had any connection to. And it actually leads some of the Mefarshim to suggest that maybe this event took place, not as we said before, Bishnat Shtayim, after the Churban, which would have been many years, would have been at least 11 years later, depending on how it is that we understand what point the beginning of the Sefer was. But a long time has passed on these kids. They're not kids anymore, if this took place really at the end, because then there was the entire Malchus of Tzidkiyo that needed to follow, and this is the Churban after the Churban, this is the second year after the Churban. So it's already 13 years later. I mean, assuming Daniel was, let's say, 14, 15, as the Ibn Ezra suggests, I mean, he's already close to 30. So they suggest that maybe what it means over here is indeed in the second year of the training, and they were still not complete. And this is where he brought them in and ended up discovering them. Okay, in any event, what's important for us to recognize is that, assuming, as almost everyone does, and as the story naturally develops, that Daniel did have already position. They all had their positions. Their positions were not to be members of the inner cabinet of these magicians and chachamim and so on. And therefore, it's very possible, suggests some of the Mefarshim, that he was not included in the warrant of arrest that Nebuchadnezzar had issued. Because over there it said, Kol Chachimaya de Bavel, and perhaps they weren't included. However, certainly the Chachimaya de Bavel weren't interested in having Daniel and his friends take over if they were going to be shot. So they saw to it that uva'ud ani ovachavaro lit katarzav as collateral damage. It wasn't as if it says over here that it was initially aimed against him, which means that even if Daniel knew what was going on initially, he did not see any reason to respond to the king or to attempt to do anything for the king. And indeed, later on, when Daniel offers the king some good advice, the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very angry. You don't give good advice to a Russia. And that Daniel was punished for that. That was part of the Chachumi Gdulato and so on. So he was not going to respond, even though we can assume that he knew what was going on. But then when he saw that Daniel and his friends were also going to be found, and they were looking for them, he decided he better act immediately. Bedayin, and therefore, Daniel hativ eita utaim le'aryoch rav tabachaya dimalka. It was at that point that Daniel recognized that it was time for a little conference with the Lord Executioner. So Rav Tabachaya is indeed the Lord High Executioner. And what's interesting is that Chazal identified this with Nebuzradan, because Nebuzradan was the one who was called the Lord High Executioner. And what's interesting is that the Gemara says that Nebuzradan indeed became a ger ultimately. We see in Yirmiyahu that he had immense, immense kavod for Nevi'ahs and for the Bnei Yisrael. And apparently, Daniel had a relationship with him and was able to speak to him. Doesn't say here what he spoke to him, but he spoke to him eitzot, which means they were all types of planning. They strategized this together. If it was Nebuzradan, it makes a heck of a lot of sense that he would be interested in putting off this type of thing as much as possible till he could get Nebuchadnezzar down to some type of normal state. You're already getting the feeling that this guy is abnormal. And that the people, I mean, he does the craziest things. I mean, off with their heads, everybody that was around.
Just now, they're coming to terms with this.
Well, yeah, no, listen, all through Megillas Esther, I mean, the king is also a madman. I mean, they're used to having absolute crazies up there. So he is... He may be a genius, he may be brilliant, but he's completely capricious and decides to do things that either you do it my way or no way. You know, we'll chop you into little bits, we'll turn your home and your family into a dunghill, and you know, and that's about it. So he understood that it was necessary to speak to the intelligent, calm people who were actually taking care of these things. And the one that he needed to speak to buy a little bit of time in a serious way, was Aryoch. And Aryoch is the, of course, that's the simon of Bavel, those were the lions with the wings and so on, which is actually a very, I don't have it, there's very nice pictures that were taken from Bavel, archaeological finds of these lions all over. They were called the leaders Aryoch, which became, later on, they used to use that name for some of the Talmid HaChomim, if they were always very powerful, so they were called Aryoch. But he spoke to Aryoch, who was the Lord High Executioner, and gave him ways and sense. Ta'im means, same thing it means in the Hebrew, divrei ta'am, itzah, the ta'am, in ways that he would be able to prevent this from happening. Now we'll see what is it he goes to do, but first he wants to get Aryoch on his side so that things don't go too fast. Dinafak lekatala l'chakim el-babo, he was on his way to perhaps reluctantly kill all of these chachamim. So then Aneva Amar la'Aryoch, who was Shalita di Malka, and then he spoke to Aryoch, who now is not called the Rav Tabachaya, but rather is called the Secretary of State. And indeed some suggest that this is very strange, given a different title, a pasuk later, maybe this is a different person. Aryoch being sort of a name for the chief of the bureaucracy. The Lord High, whatever it is. Here it is, the Lord High Secretary of State. But others learned that, in other words, he's talking to him now with wearing a different hat. Because what he needed to do, and the Malbim points this out, what he needed to do was to very delicately manipulate the Melech to actually give him time. Now, it's clear that this is crazy because the king just said, I know you're trying to buy time and therefore off with your head. So if you think the last thing that Daniel could do is walk back in there and say, I just need a little bit of time. That's all he needs. I mean, then they could have figured out maybe something worse than pulling him apart piece by piece. So he needed to feign ignorance. And feigning ignorance means, oh, had I been there, of course I would have responded. What is this all about? What's going on? I hear there's a lot of tumult going on, sirens and people banging on doors. What's happening? If it's the same guy, then we have a remarkable act going on. He speaks privately to Aryoch's friend, the Rav Tabachaya. They make up a strategy how they're going to do things. Aryoch goes home. Then Daniel walks out the Fitumo, knocks on Aryoch's other door, Secretary of State, and says, what's happening? Could you tell me what's happening? Of course, everybody overhears this, so Daniel actually never knew a thing. And he's walking in at this point, so he says, why is the king so upset and everything is being done with such a hurry and so on? They didn't speak to me. You never know. I may have been able to help. And so then Daniel told Aryoch told Daniel the whole story. Again, this everybody sees. This will be policemen that are standing there. Word gets to the king about this, ultimately this conversation. So then, after he explains it to him, Daniel says, well, no problem. And so Daniel goes to the king himself. Daniel, al uva'a min malka. Now, this means that without any type of introduction, he basically was allowed into the Oval Office. Because normally, we'll see later on, when he wants to make this official, he asks Aryoch to introduce the presence of Daniel, makes a big to-do about it with the trumpets, that when you're trying to attract the attention of the public, it's done very differently. When you want to go into the Oval Office to discuss something with the king directly, there are a few people that have access. He has access. So he goes in directly to the king. He doesn't even discuss the dream, as the Malbim points out. The dream is small potatoes, please. We'll take care of the dream. That's not the issue. But I do need to ask God for the correct interpretation to tell you, Lamalka, I mean, this is, what is this? One of these, the doctor is in 5 cent kind of things? I mean, this is the king. I gotta, there's no possible way that I'm going to be able to give you an answer because it's really not up to me. It's in the hands of God. I need overnight. I need to be able to speak to God. I need to be able to have a dream, have a communication, have a prophecy. But if you're looking for the Jewish point of view, well, you should have called me in the first place. It's not really a problem, dreams. So the king agrees. Edayin Daniel levat levaite azal. And so at that point, Daniel, to his home does he go. Ulechananya Mishael v'Azariah chavroi milta hodi. Hoda. And to his friends, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, he tells over the story. That they shall, together with him, of course, ask for Rachamim in front of the Lord of Heaven. Very interesting. Because all the time they're in Eretz Yisrael, it's Elohei Eretz. As Rashi points out, after Avram Avinu, not here, it's in Yechumash. The Gemara points out, up until Avram Avinu was always Elohei Shammai. Comes along, Avram Avinu, he makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu Elohei Haaretz. So now it's Shammai and Vaaretz. Now that they're out of Eretz Yisrael, they don't talk about Elohei Haaretz anymore. And this consistently. He's always referred to in Galut as Elohei Shammai. Because the presence of the Shekhinah on earth is a function of a functioning Beit HaMikdash. You're thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. He's Elohei Shammai again. Al Razadina to give over this secret information so he should be able to lo yavdun Daniel v'chavroi im sha'ar hakimei Babel, so that it shouldn't be chas v'shalom, that there should be no difference made between Daniel and his friends, to be like a bunch of these idiots that they call chachamim. We're no different than them, all of us belonging in the same dunghill. So therefore, they were even asking in terms of Chilul Hashem. I mean, it's just not that. We shouldn't have anything to say because these idiots don't have anything to say. And so then, indeed, to Daniel, and to Daniel alone, apparently, in visions of the night, the secrets were exposed. And Daniel Barif Lala Shemaya. And so when Aniel awoke, he blessed God of the heavens. Ani Daniel v'amar, and he said, La'avi shemeid elohim v'orach min alma v'ad alma. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name be blessed, min ha'olam v'ad ha'olam, d'chok metau gvurata d'ilehi, for all wisdom and all power is his. V'hu me'ashnei danaya v'zimnaya, he is the one who changes over the seasons and the times, because as we'll see, the dream is a vision of history in which there are many changes. He is the one who's me'adei malchin u'ma'akim malchin. He moves kings out of place, puts in new kings in their place. Yayev chokhmata l'chachamim, he gives wisdom to the wise. U'mandal yadei vina, and he gives understanding to those who are capable of insight. And of course, the famous story in the Gemara of the Matranusa that said, well, that's ridiculous. Why would he give wisdom to the wise? They already have wisdom. What? Wouldn't you give wisdom to the dumb? Why in the world is this supposed to make any sense? So the Gemara says, this was Rabbi Yosef Bar Chalafta, the Gemara says that he said to her, okay, two people come to you, they want a loan. One guy is fabulously rich, and the other guy is absolute in poverty. Who do you give the loan to? Well, obviously to the rich guy. He says, why? Well, because if anything happens to my money, you know, I mean, he's got where to make money from. I mean, this guy, what's he know about money? He'll take my money, I'll never see it again. He says, listen to what you're saying. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give chokhmah to these idiots. What are they going to do with it? They'll go to a bar and they'll sit there and make up new kind of dirty rhymes or something. And there goes your chokhmah. How are they going to pay it back? But I mean, the simple meaning, of course, is when we talk about this, you always talk about the effect as if it already happened. So for instance, we have Bigdei Arumim Yafshit. He strips off the clothes of the naked. The naked don't have clothes. But he's the one who stripped off the clothes that made them naked. That would be the Yahiv Chokmah L'Chachamim. So in other words, he gave wisdom to the wise that now have that wisdom. And that's the simple meaning of the verse. But indeed, there's something very profound here in that the Rambam points out that you can make the choice to be a Chokmah. Which means that there's two levels. This talks about Hilchos Teshuvah. So that it's up to a person to make that choice, to be a Chokmah. Which obviously doesn't mean you can suddenly become a Chokmah. But it means that path in life that is dedicated now to understanding it, that then allows you to become the kli, to become the vehicle, the vessel for being able to get that chokhmah which is given the chachimim.
But why does the Aniel need this time?
Because he needed the night.
He needed the night?
Yeah,
okay.
Because wasn't a madriga. He wasn't a Navi. And even a Navi is a night. Continues Daniel, Hu galea miktomis umsatrata. He is the one that uncovers the most profundities and those things that are fully hidden. This in the Gemara, Amikta refers to Ganem. Mastarta refers to Gan Eden. So that the entire range is exposed to him. Yoda ma b'chashuchai, knows what is in darkness. Unora imei sherei, and light dwells with him. Lach elohavati, to you, God of my fathers, and that's because my fathers are Nevi'im, B'nai Yisrael Akar B'nai Nevi'im. Mohodal mishabach, I am mohodal to you, I praise you. Ana, dechichmato gurata yaftli, because you gave me this insight and this power to be able to stand and explain it. Uchano da'atani d've'ina minach, you let me know what it is that I begged you to let me know. Dimilat malka hoda'atena. Now hoda'atena is Lashon Rabbi, which is not what he said a moment ago. He said hoda'atani. Here it's mashpul also chadani b'shul v'azariah. But that says the Eben Ezra is not really a problem, because since he told the other ones what had happened, he was the one that maybe was given that chokhmah, as we saw earlier. But at this point, you let us know what it was that the king needed to know. Kol kabel dana, and in light of all of this, Daniel al aryoch, al means to go up to, al, second al is two, el, what we would say in Hebrew. See, when Allah El Arioch would be the Hebrew expression. Al Al Arioch.
But I thought every time Daniel spoke to Hashem, he had the Lashna Kodesh.
Not when it's exposed in this way, where it's, things are happening in his head. We'll see later. The mini Malka, Lohavada, Lechakim Evavel, the very man that the king had appointed to destroy the Chachamim of Bavel, Azal, to him he went. V'chein Amarle, and so he did tell him to do this, that Lechakim Evavel Alta Oved, do not destroy the Chachamim of Bavel, Haleni Koda Malka Upishul Malka Achama. Bring me in front of the king, and I am going to explain the dream to him. Now, this is the same guy who the night before walked into the king himself. So what's happening over here, again, is a very, very delicate balance. If he walks into the king and makes it appear that, oh, these guys are a bunch of idiots, you never asked me, I could have told you right then and there. So then he is putting himself into an absolutely horrific political position. Because then anybody who is able to survive this onslaught has got one guy in mind to get rid of, you understand? On the other hand, if he makes it appear as if his only concern is saving the Chachamim of Bavel, which is what he did when he went in publicly and knocked on the door of the Secretary of State, says, what's going on? Oh my God, the king is going to... Nothing about me, of course. I mean, it wasn't even said, as it works out, that Gezeirah was never against him. The king is going to destroy these wonderful Chachamim, but that's terrible. I have an idea. We could put it off. He just didn't give us enough time. I'll be able to do it. So this way, he asks Arioch, how about if you go in, so it isn't coming from me, and you make it seem like you've been doing research among the Chachamim and so on, and you say that you've discovered a guy that's going to be able to help, and then you make it part of that way you have an excuse as to why you didn't go ahead and kill all the Chachamim above, all because as you were about to lift the sword, it suddenly became clear to you that the answer is here, and that all you need to do is go back into the king and tell him. So this way he's pretending that there never was an appointment. Obviously he had an appointment. The king had given him time, so he had an appointment. It's until 9 o'clock in the morning. He goes to Arioch and allows Arioch to present it, which of course Nebuchadnezzar immediately understands what's going on here. This is a very, very delicate balance. But Nebuchadnezzar's getting a complex picture in all of this of Daniel. He's really the guy who knows, and yet he wants to be in a position where he doesn't have to worry about being the guy that is openly turning everybody against him and against the Jews, and recognizes the danger of that. And so the whole thing is an act from beginning to end. The first plan with Arioch, the public meeting with Arioch, the private meeting with the king, followed by a public meeting of the king, in which Arioch is acting as the very guy who was stopped just in time by the discovery of Daniel, who of course was only interested in preventing tragedy. And so then Arioch, in a terrific hurry, which of course is the same thing that happens with Yosef, they ran him out of the border. So here too, I mean over here there was a reason for him to put on this cloak of hurry, because he was really had no business in stopping at any moment the executions that he was supposed to be in charge of. Well, he's in charge of killing everybody. What's he doing coming back and giving the king an eitzah that maybe there's a way out of this? So he had to present himself as if, you know, look, I'm on my way back, but there's this possibility that he might be interested in hearing all of this. And as we saw yesterday, he is supposedly unaware of the fact that Daniel already has an appointment with the king, makes it look as if he's the guy that has discovered this as part of the attempt to save the Chachamim of Bavel, and so he introduces Daniel to the king. And so he says to him, "The Ashkachat Givarim in Bnei Galuta de Yehud, I have found a man from amongst the people of Galut of Yehuda." You'll notice he calls him a Givar, not a Yelad at this point, because again, they've been here perhaps as much as 20 years, certainly a minimum of 13 years, if we take on even the Pirish that we originally started with, but he's still got the entire time of Malchut Tzidkiyo, the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, and then 2 years afterwards, which was how we were talking about in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar. So at this point, he's already close to 30, if not more. And I found men from the Galut of Yehuda, the Fish Relamalka Yehuda, who is going to interpret the dream to the king in a way that will be satisfactory. Lamalka, just as Paro we said, Ein, there's nobody who can make, as Rashi points out, there is no one who is Mepharshit Lefaro. Everybody's got Pirush, but not Lamalka. Why not? Because it wasn't a Pirush that was sufficiently broad and integrated as a Pirush that was necessary for the Melach. So it's like over there that we're giving Pirushim. Well, you'll have seven sons, you'll have seven daughters. What's the importance of that? Well, what does that have to do with the sense of destiny and cosmic meaning that I felt was invested in this dream? Now, he's going to tell you. Ane Malka v'amar l'Daniel d'shmei Belshazzar. And that means, if we mention it now, that his name was Belshazzar, which is the name, as we'll see later, the name of his personal God that he himself gave to Daniel. That means that it was that name that made him hesitate. I mean, maybe with everybody else he would have said, I've had another attempt to buy time. But maybe this is serious. I mean, I sensed something in him that was divine. Is it indeed within your powers to let me know the content of the dream that I saw and its interpretation? Of course not. How could any human being have that power? And of course, this was another attempt that he made to belittle his own role so that it wouldn't appear as if, yes, I am indeed greater than all of the Chachamim of Babel. No, actually, everything I said to you was right. What it is that you demanded is absolutely out of the reach of any wise man, of any magician, of any demonologist, of any person, the Ashman, of the soothsayers, the astrologers, soothsayers, judges, people who use the tea leaves to tell you the future, Gozrin, Gezerot. None of these guys could possibly have answered that question, and neither can I. Moran. However, we need to take into consideration something else, and that is Itai Allah B'Shamaya. There is a God up in heaven, though, is there not? And he is Galei Razin, and he exposes things that are hidden from humans. And the whole point of this dream revolves around you, because you are the great one. He wishes for the great king Nebuchadnezzar to know what is meant to happen throughout history. And because of that, Chelmach v'chezveire shach ha-mishkevach denahu. And therefore, he wanted you to know the following thoughts that were in your own head while you were lying on your bed. Because every dream, the Gemara uses this as the makor for the insight that dreams are expressions of the subconscious. And therefore, he begins by saying, this doesn't come from God. Why would you have a communication from God? This comes from your head. And it's because of the fact that you are such a great man to have been concerned with the entire scope of history, that because of that, you had the capability of being in touch with this information. And I'm simply a conduit so that you should know what it is that you were searching for. Maybe this is all over the world, but nobody has the receptors for it. You were the one that actually caused this information to be generated. Because Anta Malka, Rayonacha Mishkevach Saliku, you, when you got onto your bed, you took along with you the things that you were concerned about and what you were thinking about. Ma Dila Hevi Achreidina, what is going to be happening after Malchut Babel? You already sense the flows in history. You sense that things are changing. And this is what you were concerned with. And so as you fell asleep with those thoughts in your head, and you had various ideas of where history was heading. The Galei Razio da'ach Madilahavi. And it was because of that, the Megale of these secrets want you to know, is responding to what it is that you were thinking about. This has nothing to do with me. The Ana, as far as I'm concerned, nothing that has to do with my great wisdom and insight. Lo bechokma di taibim in kol chaya. I don't have any more wisdom than any other living being. I'm not more intelligent. It's not because of that that Raza did not Galilee. It's not because of that that I was given the secret. Simply because of the fact that God's intent was to inform you so that I am a mere instrument in your royal hands, actually. That here over here, the rayonelavavcha, the thoughts of your own heart, that is the thing that tindat you must know. And now I will begin reminding you of what it is that you saw. Ant malka chazei havaya. You, O king, you are looking, and behold, ve'alut selem chad, suddenly in front of you, you see this amazing image, which is extremely sagi. It's very, very powerful, very, very striking. And this selem that you saw, is Talma Diken Rav. It was extremely large. It is growing, standing there in front of you with much more light than you would have expected to see from simple reflected light. Vereve Dechel. And the way that it looks, it's Mar'e, Reve, Mar'ehu, so to speak, is Dechel. It's Dechel. It's terrifying. It's awesome. Hut Salma, this was basically an image, a statue. By the way, there's a question of what the word diken means. Almost everybody learns that diken means da ken, that Salem as it was. Rashi translated it as meaning diken, it was based, meaning kan. It had a kane on it. This was the kan of the Salem, so that what you were looking at was this massive statue on an enormous base, so that it should have been able to stand and to survive, and you were convinced that this is something that's there forever. It was made, this image, its head was made out of beautiful, pure gold. And chadoi, its breast, its chest, and diraoi, and its arms, were made out of silver, the ksaf. Ma'oi, its belly, the yarchate, and its thighs, were made of nechash. It's made out of bronze. Shakohi, and yet its lower leg was made, legs were made out of parcel, out of iron. And Ragloi, its actual feet, were remarkably constructed of an impossible mixture of minhendi farzel and minhendi chasaf. It was partially made out of iron and partially made out of clay or earthenware. We'll see that both of those things are actually used. He changes language later on to give more detail in the interpretation, just as Yosef did. Now, as you're watching, Chazeh Avayata, you're watching until suddenly, right there, Adi, Itkezeret Evan Yilabi Yadayim, suddenly a stone is hewed out of nowhere, not with human hands, and it is mechat, it smashes now, Letzalma Aragloi de Parzal Vachasma, smashes into this image, right on its feet, which are made out of iron and out of earthenware, Vahadekat Himon, and absolutely crushes them into nothing, at which point the entire thing collapses, having no base or feet. Badayin Daku Kachadan, at that point everything becomes crushed together in one enormous, hopeless mixture. The parzo, the chaspa, the nechasha, the kaspa, the nahava. So all of them become now one massive mix. And what happens is that it turns into vahaviku ulmin idrikai. It turns into nothing but like the, how do you say, motzim, or the chaff that is blowing in the wind from the threshing floors in the middle of the summer. Unesaimon, and now the rucha, this wind came, carried it all away. And then when you looked, tried to find where this thing was, there was no space that could be identified as the place that had originally held the statue. And that single rock that had come from nowhere, the Avda de Merchat Letzalma, that had crushed on that image, suddenly began to grow and have it a tour rav until it grew into an enormous mountain, Walat Kol Ara, and filled the entire globe. That's the dream. And I'm going to tell you what it means. I'm not going to tell you an interpretation. I'm going to tell you fishre, its interpretation. Not fishra, which is the word that was used before, but that was suggesting an interpretation. This is not an interpretation. You'll immediately recognize that this is directly talking to you is what you saw, what you understood, now that you're able to see it consciously. I'm going to tell you Pishrei Namar Kona Malka, okay? Now, here's the deal. You see, Ant Malka, now, Chazal read this way, even though it's against the placing of the Etnakta. There's really three ways to read this. One is Ant Malka, comma, which is not the way the Mesorah has the translation. Ant Malka, it is the way that Chazal may understand it, because according to the Gemara, this is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, many understand that the Chazal took this to mean Ant Malka, comma, you, king, the Melech Malchaya de Elaha Shemaya, the great king of kings, who is the God of heaven. But others learn, Ant Malka, Melech Malchaya, that he's talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. And that's, of course, that's how the song takes it. Ant Malka, Melech Malchaya, is taken from this passage, of course. So you, meaning just like we find that Melech can often refer to as, we find even in the Gemara, you know, you king, not being king at all, but rather being the one that he's talking to, but he doesn't mean the one that you're talking to. So he'll say, Ne'eman alai malki, you know, referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wow, you trust me that much? Okay, then I give you this and that. So it could be that that's what Chazal really mean, that we're not talking to him, talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But, all, I mean, obviously, whenever we have these multiple interpretations, he's hearing them too. Yeah, he understands the difference and the way that this can be read. And he understands this is a subtle guy. So I'm not going to be able to catch him on what he's saying. So he's talking about the Melech Malchaya, who is Elohai Shemaya. He has given you Malchuta Chisna V'takfa V'yikara Yahav Lacha. And the Malchum understands this to mean four different things. He's given you Malchut, he's given you Chosen, you know, protected, Tokva, strong against other, Yikara and Kavod has given you. But others learn, even though it's not really grammatically correct, is that Malchut Chisna is actually Malchut Chosna, that is to say, a very, very well-fortified kingdom, and also Tokva V'Yikara Yahavilach, which I don't know why, but anyway, that's many of the Rishonim learn. But the point is that behold, Dairin B'nai Anasha, wherever now, any place that is part of civilization, where human beings have settled, and even Chevat Bara, the Ofei Shemaya, the part of the song, Antu Melech, Malcha Malchaya, and so the B'nai Anasha, the Chevat Bara, the wild animals, the Of Shemaya, all of these things, Yahav Biyadach, has given over into your hands, Vahashletach, and has made you the Sholet on Cholon and all of them. Antavu Reshadidahava, it's you. You who are the golden head. Now, this is actually a reference to Malchut Bavel. As I'll say, well, what does this mean? This Of Shemaya, Chevat Bara. So in Ochiyami says the Medrash that to Ahasuerus was given over the power to be Gozer on the Chayot HaSadeh. Who did I say? I'm sorry. I'm jumping out of myself. To Nebuchadnezzar was given the power to be Gozer on the Chayot HaSadeh, on the Of HaShemayim, so that his Malchut was very, very strongly expressive of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus, which accounts for the integration of Antu Malka, Melech Malchaya. In other words, there really was a sense of the divine about him, and we'll see later on, because I'll say that his power of Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if it hadn't been in the Malach came and slapped him across the face, he would have drowned out David HaMalach, so that it needed to be stopped. So there was something very unique about this man. And he gave all of these things to you and let you lord over them, and therefore you are the head of gold, which is beautiful, which everybody sees it as being lifted above the rest of the world. But as we go down, and we see how it is that Malchut is expressed on lower and lower levels till it touches the earth. So, Batrach Tekum Malchut Achari, there will be another Malchut. A Malchut which is Araminach. It's nowhere near as solid as yours. It's lower than you. And that Malchut will be followed by a Malchut Elitai Achari. There will be also a third Malchut after that one. And that one will be Nechasha. And it will be very pretty, because Nechoshet, looks like gold, and that is a reference to Yavan. Paras, Modai is less. I don't know. I think they're both alloys of copper. It's not mamish copper because that's too soft. Which will be so powerful that it will rule over the entire earth, but nonetheless, it will be less than you. Now, if you consider the understanding here, which again, I mean, this is my suggestion. I don't find the Rishonim relating it to it in this fashion, but I think it's pretty clear in the historical perspective that the meaning of Daniel is as you get further along in history, you become further associated with the earth as a whole. So that the level of the, and I'm going to bring you Raya towards the end of his interpretation. And as you go along, the Malchut, when we have these metals, is less exclusive, is the point. So that gold is pure and very exclusive. And that's what's unique about gold, is that it really doesn't alloy. All you have is a little bit of heat, and the gold is completely there. It's pure. That's what's unique about gold, and that's why people always viewed gold as being part of something heavenly, part of the divine. It was something that you would eat, you would drink. Even today, there's people who do it in order to live forever. It's the fountain of youth because it's eternal. The only thing that's eternal, where the Medrash puts it, is it doesn't belong in this world. Everything else is corruptible. Gold isn't corruptible. It was put on this world only in order to be used for the Beit HaMikdash, which is meant to be in corrupt. Okay, so people have this natural sense of what gold is, but it's therefore its exclusivity. In other words, you view yourself, if you take a look at it, it's very much the direction of history. You view yourself here in Bavel as being sort of la creme de la creme. The Malchus consists of pyramid, here on the top of the pyramid. Malchut, ultimately, is what he's pointing out, will consist of the bottom of the pyramid. So that the integration will come about, which is always the nature of integration, which the organism finds itself alive through integrated separate elements that become now a holistic something or other, it's going to be extremely low level. So that it will ultimately become, of course, Koras and Modai become democracies to some extent, or the republics, in which everybody has got a say, and now Ahasuerus ultimately has got to worry about politics, party politics. He literally makes a party that becomes the marker for politics. The politician is a populist. Everybody has to come around. They have a beauty contest. They have the photography moments and so on. The Greeks are democracies. I mean, that's crazy. That's an incredibly cheap malchus, which power now comes from the people. It's starting to come from bottom up instead of from top down. There's no longer a head. There's a heart. And then it goes down from the heart, and it becomes the things that people stand on. And then it becomes the things that are actually integrated with the earth, so that the very feet themselves are made out of clay. And that becomes a malchus where the integration is so bottom-up that it's ultimately without anybody in it at all. There's no melech. It's just what it is, a lot of toes and mixtures of power, but earthy power that has nothing to stand on, really. So that what we're talking about over here is not the way that the Rishonim understood it, because it was as yet an incomplete picture of where Malchus could head. It's very difficult to see this. But that in reality, this is a very beautiful way of seeing the devolution of Malchus, to the point where the strongest Malchus in human history, which ends up becoming Western civilization, mostly the way that America was built Malchus, was a rebellion against the concept of a head. There can't be a head. There can only be feet. There's government of the people, by the people, for the people. All of that is the antithesis, you would think, of Malchus. That grows into itself with an internet, with an integration that nobody is running, that happens all on its own. And that is a low-class Malchus. From your point of view, the idea of Malchus is a functional brain that's organized in one place, and that is in control of everything. That it's not going to be that way. And that's the sense that you are detecting. It really happens immediately afterward. The next step, right away, is these ideas of multiculturalism now that Koresh starts getting involved in. Best ways of control of the world is let them control themselves. Then you have the governors. The governors get together. The governing conference. And then they're going to select a king. And now we have a king who isn't even supposed to be king. And he's no longer a divine king. He's just the guy, as the Gemara puts it, he had the most money, he could run the best campaign, so that he was always feeling, I'm not really a melech. That was just a couple doras later. But that happens after Nebuchadnezzar. Of course he's sensitive to those flows. By the way, you know exactly where you see this thing, the king and I. In the king and I, the king is sensitive to the very issues that are bothering Nebuchadnezzar. He goes to sleep on his bed, so to speak, exactly the way that Daniel describes to him. And this is what you're thinking about. What is going to happen after me? And that's exactly what happens in the play. That his child is already, as he's dying, his child is already letting loose. And nothing is to be controlled from the top anymore. And everybody should have a chance at education, and so on and so forth. So these are real things. They're so real on the level here. They're, you know, things that he's saying in public. You'll notice, however, that there's two stages. He's very careful when he says, Dina chelma, upishrein neymar kadam malta. Many understand this to mean, now that was the dream, which can be exposed publicly, and everybody's very excited about this dream. Now I suggest we go into private chambers, kadam malta, so that I can explain to you what's happening. Because this is not something that you want people to be talking about, thinking about, because it's truly a breakdown in your own control. And what's interesting is that Nebuchadnezzar immediately understands it for what it is. It means the end of his sense of Malchus, which is exactly why the next thing that he does, even after he hears this and accepts it, is to go out and fight it with everything that he can. He has now a new way in which he's going to reassert control using an enormous statue. It's the weirdest thing. So he takes this dream and he tries to give it an interpretation that will allow him to maintain his control and not accept that these are irrevocable forces that are going to be scattering all the things that he's doing. So this is how the Sefer evolves along the lines, starting from this and how it is that Nebuchadnezzar responds to it, as opposed to powerless response. And the truth is that his unwillingness to be open to the response is the reason that what Daniel does is so different than what Yosef does. Yosef, the interpretation wasn't something about the structure and the nature of Malchus. It was about the structure and nature of Yesod, the way that Malchus is able to address itself to the people that relate to it. And therefore, he, being as that's exactly what his power was, offers and is immediately selected to be the missing ingredient. Here, there's no missing ingredient. It's not that Daniel is going to be able to provide what it is that Nebuchadnezzar needs to survive. Nobody can, because we're past that stage. Malchus has devolved. And at this point, the questions of the Emach, HaShechar, Gedolah, the Dofelet, or the various levels of the four Lashonos in my Sibarashis that express the same thing, become here four Lashonos as well, in further devolution, which of course is actually an evolution in terms of the individual human and the part that each person has to play in the development of history. So these things he doesn't want to say publicly. But you can see how popular the idea is. Just from the fact, I mean, The King and I was one of the most successful plays and one of the most long-lasting plays, redone as a movie, redone again as a movie. This is just a remarkable success, and it's basically a Daniel vision, except it has a combination of Daniel and Esther, uses a woman to be the vehicle of that change. As indeed happens, Daniel and Esther, profoundly connected. Basically, Yosef, Daniel, and Esther are connected throughout all the Midrash and throughout all the ways in which they're referred to, the things that happen to them, the impact that they have, and the actual interrelationship of Daniel, Hatach, as Hatach and Esther later on, the next stage of this Malchus. So, yes, we're talking about something that has a very strong historical resonance and resonates very deeply in people's minds who have a sense that there are changes afoot. So then, the Malchus Revi'ayah, and notice that it doesn't say Achori. The reason it doesn't say Achori is because it isn't Achori. The meaning of Acher, remember, doesn't only mean afterwards. It means Elisha ben Avuya. It means Zera Acher, Tachas Heva. Acher means coming from elsewhere. And therefore, as the Medrash says, what is Zera Acher, Tachas Heva? Ruta Moavia. coming from elsewhere. Who is Acher? Elisha ben Avuya. Can't, this is not the guy. Here, it's not Acher, because according to Chazal, it represents the original kochot that were split between Yaakov and Esa, and this is the Malchut Revi'ah, and which is therefore coming from as close as you can get to where it is that Yisrael is really supposed to be growing. And this becomes now Christianity, supposed Judeo-Christian civilization, the sense that we are Yisrael, or we can lay claims to being Yisrael, or we're the legitimate heirs of Yisrael, so that what's involved over here in the lack of the word Achori is the fact that you do have, for the first time, a connection to the entire monotheistic tradition. And this is not coming from outside, from elsewhere. This is right at home. And that's why it's the most dangerous Malchus, the most long-lasting Malchus, the most challenging Malchus philosophically, seems to be better at doing what you set out to do than you are, and all of the other elements of it. And that all that lies in just that one word. And so it's interesting that it has a dual personality, says Daniel. On the one hand, it's an industrial Malchus. It doesn't use pretty things. It uses technically powerful things. It's built of steel. It's not interested in gold, silver, and brass or bronze. That's not the point. It's all a matter of power, steel. Tekifa keparzala. It's going to be extremely powerful. Kol kabel deparzala mahadek vechasher. Just as we understand, taking into consideration kol kabel, again, one of those very broad kind of expressions that occurs again and again and again in the Aramaic, as we've seen, as against the fact, or in light of the fact, or you understand that this is an expression of the fact, that this is what metal is all about, isn't it? What it does is it crushes into things that are absolutely dock, tiny little pieces that are left after it goes through the crushing power of the steel grinder. The chashel is the sense of the that which is weak, that which is falling apart. So it now crushes and breaks up everything, kula. And it's indeed keparzel, it's just like barzel. Dimira'a kol ilan, tiduk, tadik v'teroa. It's also barzel that really can be used as weapons. On the one hand, it can be just a mahadeh, a mechashel, which means it can just smooth things down and reshape them, melt them, a vast melting pot of barzel. But it can also crush things and destroy them. So it can be meiria to them, used as weapons to destroy, breaking them. V'dicha zayta raglaya v'etzba'ata. And this that you noted in your vision, the feet and the toes, that minhan is the Cree, hasav dipechar, some of them, you'll notice, was very strange, an impossible mixture. Some of it was a potter's clay. Uminhan parzel, and some of them were made out of iron. That's because pliga to heavy. This remarkably will be integrated in the sense of a malchut and yet broken up in the sense of politics. So that it could be a remes to the breakup of Rome, the two main powers of Rome. But again, if my analysis is correct, it's much more than that. It's that the integration is primarily cultural as a civilization, but not necessarily political. So you can have all of these factions. This is what the Gemara Megillah puts it. That every single day there's 100 different battles. So how is it a malchus? If every single day there's 100, so they kill each other, the next day they come back, kill each other another way. That is a metaphorical sense of this, there's never anything that represents a state of being in that malchus. The point of it is that it's a constant balance. It's an act of balancing of things that are really dynamically against each other. And of course, that's even the way that the American Constitution is arranged. That's the sense. It's checks and balances in a much deeper way than people realize. You have people going and shouting about special interests, and that was the whole point of the United States. Without special interests, it never would have survived. The idea is that it was big enough to provide a balance between special interests. Nobody ever thought that it could survive as a democracy, and indeed it can't. That's why it's falling apart. It was never anybody stupid enough to say, let's just go according to the majority. It was always a matter of an electoral college of special interests, so that we can balance special interests. We can't balance everybody. That's impossible. I just had to turn this thing off. Oh, that's right. I forgot somebody taught me about that. Maybe I've got it. Here we go. And so, despite the fact that I've just described it as being so immensely powerful, remarkably, everybody's on each other's throats. It's a Malkut Peliga to have. It's going to be a broken-up Malkut. And in exactly the same way that you understand that you can be broken and yet have the iron and the steel in the actual breakup. So that's exactly what it is. It's Malkut Peliga to have. And yet, minitzbata di parzel lahaviba, from the Nitzbata. Nitzbata means the power, but it's not just the power, it's the power to stand. Atem nitzavim hayom. So it's got this, it's got the staying power of the massive technology that's behind it, even though it doesn't have what you would think the integrative power from a political point of view. But that will be there. Kol kabel dechazayita parzalam arav b'chasavtina. Because what you also said before, he didn't say it was chasavtina. He said it was chasavti fakar. Chasavti fakar is potter's clay that is baked. Now he's talking about chasavtina, which is just dirt, mud. Mud isn't potter's clay. So apparently now we're getting a sense of the differences. And, that, and before we didn't know that they were actually mixed. We had this feeling maybe one leg was this and one leg was that. Or one toe was this. Or one, now it's no. This whole thing, there's fundamental weaknesses in the entire material so that it's expressing what appear to be contradictory types of things. It's very powerful, but it has no idea what it's about. Doesn't know how to use its power. Has elements of staying power simply because of its vast tekifa and its breadth, but absolutely no sense of integration, clarity of vision, purpose that allows it to function. And because of that, for all intents and purposes, you're looking at a paper tiger. So it looks very powerful, but when you see what it's standing on material that has absolutely no ability to sustain it, just as it's made out of iron, which can't possibly really mix with mud. That's Aftina. So that its identity is a constant struggle between factions, elements of mind. So that it's always being led in one direction, another direction. But it's the opposite of what you think a malchut should be, which is remarkable. And
this is the identity.
That is its identity. Right. In other words, it's the sum total of its power, of its history as not even recognized, but just what has built it up. It's such a remarkably accurate description of the breakdown of that fourth malchus. That, I mean, it's really striking. Because it's exactly what's going on. You've got all of the economic strength. You've got all of this massive resources that have been built up over hundreds of years. And millions of human lives having constructed something that is just nobody knows how to run it. Nobody knows what it really is. Constantly struggling to make it work and nobody on top. Nobody to make a decision that we need to do this. We need to do that. Constant attempts to balance different views in a way that gets the least people upset. But it's absolutely mind-boggling. So that this, the Nebuchadnezzar, is like, what? Is this possible that it could reach something like that? And that's the Etzbatara Glaya. You saw those toes that are mixed, Minayin Parzel, Minayin Chasaf. That is because you will have movements from one part of it to the other part. Minktzat malchut tavit akiva. There will be some of it that will be very powerful. Uminat havit avira. Some of it will be very fragile. And yet they will all integrate in the sense that they support each other. The fragile supporting the strong. The strong providing the nuclear weapons for the fragile. And so on and so forth. And it's the chazayet parzalam arv b'chasavtina. And this that you see an impossible thing. You see iron and steel that's mixed in mud. I mean, you know what that means? And here is the raya that I mentioned earlier, that here is the question is exclusivity and clarity of identity. The mixture of iron in mud is because mitarvin lahavon bizra anasha. They will be a multicultural civilization that will not work. The lola heaven dafkin denayim dana. They will never discover the way to be really connected one to the other. So they will attempt to mix things, and you'll have all different nationalities and all different types of ideas. And you know how well it's going to go? It's going to go about as well as mud mixes with steel. That's how well it's going to go. It's never going to be attached. It's never going to become a whole. As the Chancellor of Germany intoned last week, multiculturalism is dead. Echa di parzala lo mitarevin chas, but exactly the same way that nobody's ever managed to mix steel with pottery. And then the rest of the dream will be yumeyun di malchayinun. And in that time, which you have all of this confusion of these different smaller leaders that are the toes and the people that are never getting together, suddenly out of nowhere, Yekim Elaha Shemaya Malchudi La'alamin, the Lord of the heaven is going to create an eternal integration, which is Lotit Chabal, is never going to in any way be shaken, Umalchut Elaham Acharan Lotishub Tebek, which will be purified, never confused in its identity, never to be passed on to any other nation. Tadik v'taseif kol ilein malchavata, in exactly the same way that you saw the stone crush that statue. It will break and crush all remnants of those malchiot that never really worked. V'yi tekum la'olmaya, and it will stand forever. In exactly the same way that you saw that out of a mountain there came a stone from nowhere, not from human hands, so that you cannot see what you saw before, the application of cause and effect, the application of power, and somebody making something happen. The whole point of the ultimate malchut is that no one makes it happen. And then you saw that from that which no one made happen, Hadeket Parzala Nechasha Chaspa Kaspa V'Dahava, do you see all of this just mixing and crushing into dust? All of the steel and all of the copper and all of the earth together with the silver and the gold. So has Elaha Rav, the great God, Odala Malka, has let you, the king, know. Ma di lahavi achredena, what is going to come after you? And now, v'yatziv chelma u'meheman pishrei. Now, do you see? This is absolutely what you saw, isn't it? And it's 100% clear that this is what it means and this is what's going to happen. Be'dayin malka Nebuchadnezzar nafala nanpui l'daniel segid. And at that moment, the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and bowed down to Daniel. U'mincha v'nichulchina malan aschachalei. He wanted to make him into a god and to bring him korbanos and to pour out nesachim. It says, Amar, he wished to, which is clear that Daniel wouldn't allow it. When he saw that Daniel would not allow it, was not in any way kidding around when he was talking about, I'm a vehicle. Then he said, Ana malkal Daniel v'amar, now min kshot, it's really true. The Elahachon, hu Elaha Elohim, Umori Malchin, Vigalei Razin, he is indeed the God of all gods, master of kings, the uncoverer of secrets, that allowed it to be that the Echalta, the Migla Rasad, now that you were able to know this, this is wild. Adayin Malkala, Daniel Rabi, Umatan, Ravravan, Sagin, Yahavle, and therefore at that point, the king, you put Daniel onto a political pedestal, gave him tremendous power, unbelievable gifts. And not only that, Hashlatei Al-Kol B'ninat Bavel made him the one, exactly as Yosef, Al-Picha Yishak, the entire country is going to come to you. here too, everyone would come to him. And besides that, Varav Signin al Kol Hakimei Babel, he shall be the one in charge of all of the Chachamim directly. And then Daniel Ba'amin Malka. Daniel specifically requested to the king, and he indeed went along with Umani al Avirata de Medinat Babel, appointing over the actual industry of Babel Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the ones who were the friends of Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, with Daniel Bitra Malka. Daniel himself stayed at the gate of the king as his most trusted personal advisor.